Well, good afternoon. On behalf of President Clinton, I want to thank everyone for participating in the Global Health Session. And I have to say, we certainly got started with some good news this morning, as you probably saw. Norway and the Netherlands committed almost $1.2 billion to maternal and child health this morning. So let's hear it for Norway and the Netherlands. And I think that's even more impressive when you consider that Norway has a population of 4.7 million. So for the United States to make a similar commitment would be $60 billion. So that's pretty significant. So if anyone is interested in matching that, by the way, please let me know. And you'll have the opportunity here to hear directly from Prime Minister Stoltenberg at the panel that we're having on maternal and child health. That is going to start at 1:30. And in addition to the panel on maternal and child health, we also have sessions on vaccines, drug resistance, health systems, and global nutrition. So we have a great 3 days of working group sessions. So I hope all of you do four things. Have fun, learn something new, find a new partner that amplifies the work that you're trying to get done, and I hope that all of you are inspired to act to reduce the huge disparities that exist in global health between the developed and developing countries. One of the things that is very important to CGI is not only that its members make commitments, but that they keep them. And so one of the things that we want to highlight in this session is the remarkable progress that many of our members are making in implementing their commitments. And I'd first like to ask Susan Arnold to come up to the stage. Susan is the president of Procter & Gamble's global business units, and under Susan's direction, Procter & Gamble has really become a leader in sustainability, and Procter & Gamble is sponsoring the Global Health Session. So please join me in welcoming Susan Arnold.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You know, it's fair to say that we're inspired by the vision and the priorities of the Global Clinton Initiative, and I am really proud of the work that the work that CGI is leading is such a strong fit with what we believe and what we're doing at Procter & Gamble. You know, companies like P&G are a force in this world. If you think about it, nearly a third of the 100 largest economic entities in the world are corporations, not countries. And our opportunity is to be a force for good. What inspires us is the impact we can have when we step up to this opportunity, an impact that would be impossible to achieve as individuals, but which is achievable as a company of 130,000 people who share a common purpose and common values. Our Children's Safe Drinking Water program is a great example. It's the signature global program of P&G's Live, Learn, and Thrive corporate cause, and it's desperately needed. More than a billion people on the planet don't have access to clean water. 4,000 babies and children die every day from unsafe water. It's tragic, and it's preventable. We have technology, a product called Pure, purifier of water, that makes unsafe water safe. And our challenge has been to get this product where it's needed most, places like Uganda, Malawi, Kenya, Ethiopia, Congo, and Pakistan. So we stepped up to the opportunity by creating a network of global partners who could help us. A network that includes Population Services International, the Centers for Disease Control, CARE, International Medical Corps, and many others. Through this network, we've now provided more than 700 million liters of safe drinking water, and our work is far from over. In addition to efforts already underway, we've turned our attention to schools that need safe drinking water. It is hard to believe, but according to UNICEF, literally half of all the schools in the world don't have access to safe water. So at this meeting last year, we committed to reach 1 million school children in Africa with water and hygiene education, and to provide 130 million liters of safe drinking water. And I am very pleased to tell you that we've hit our target of 130 million liters 2 years ahead of schedule. We've reached 200,000 children with just this education program, and we have plans in place for large-scale school programs in 6 countries. And we're not letting up. Because it costs only 2 cents a day to provide safe drinking water for a child, we're starting a campaign, actually a campaign inspired by President Clinton, that will enable other groups, including U.S. schools, to help us reach even more people. It's called Give Your 2 Cents Worth, and I do believe it's going to be a huge success. So I think we should thank President Clinton for that inspiration, too. So overall, this is just one small example, but it does illustrate the point that I would like to leave you with. The challenges we face in the world today are too great to be managed by governments or by nonprofits or by private enterprise alone. To make the kind of impact that's needed, we simply have to create new models for how the public, private, and nonprofit sectors work together. CGI is a catalyst for these new partnerships, and we at P&G are proud to be among the partners and to have the opportunity to be a force for good in the world, now and for generations to come. Thank you.
I'm very excited to announce Margaret McGlynn, who's the president of Global Vaccines and Infectious Disease at Merck. And under her leadership, Merck made a huge commitment in 2006 and is making an even more ambitious commitment this year. Margaret?
Well, thank you and good afternoon. I am really pleased to have the opportunity to come back again this year and share with you the progress that has been made on the commitment that Merck announced at last year's CGI meeting. And that commitment was that Merck pledged to make our new vaccine, Rotatec, available to all children born in Nicaragua over the next 3 years at no cost in order to protect those children against the effects of rotavirus disease. Now, hopefully all of you in this room know what rotavirus disease is, but there are many in the world who do not. The effects of this virus, though, are felt throughout the world across all socioeconomic groups. About 600,000 infants and young children die every year around the world due to the severe diarrhea and dehydration caused by this virus, and the deaths are much more prevalent in the developing world because of the healthcare infrastructure issues. Well, just 2 years ago in Nicaragua, this virus swept through the country. More than 60,000 cases of diarrhea were reported, and there were 56 deaths, all of them in children under the age of 5. Now, the organizations such as the Gavi Alliance, WHO, and UNICEF have made remarkable progress over the last several years in improving immunization rates in every corner of the globe. And this has been enabled through the generous funding of the Gates Foundation, many national governments, and other donors who have stepped up to make a difference. These organizations have also made significant progress in closing the gap that exists between when a new vaccine is introduced in the developed world and the time it takes to get that same vaccine in the developing world. Well, the developing world used to have to wait 15 to 20 years to get access to a new vaccine. Now, because of these organizations, in many cases, that access occurs within a few years. But when Rotatec was approved in 2006, we looked at a country like Nicaragua, and we thought about the burden of illness they were experiencing in 2005. We didn't want them to wait at all. We wanted them and the children and families of Nicaragua to get immediate relief. And we wanted to provide the evidence base for decisions by governments that would be made in order to introduce this vaccine once a Gavi access program was underway, which it has now been approved. Well, the government of Nicaragua embraced this partnership, and within just 6 weeks of this meeting last year, we had the first infant immunized in Nicaragua. And they have had a remarkable communications and outreach program, including television advertising. And they have been able to immunize nearly all infants born in Nicaragua, and that's about 100,000 infants, having among the highest immunization rates in the world. And the results in the first half of this year, there were no rotavirus outbreaks in Nicaragua, and the number of deaths was significantly reduced from 2005. This accomplishment is really a testament to the work of many, but most importantly, those on the ground in Nicaragua, especially the Ministry of Health and the national government. But this work is also a testament to the important leadership role that the Clinton Global Initiative is playing in inspiring people and organizations to do more, to make a difference. And that is why today I am proud to announce that Merck is committing to make another important new vaccine available to the developing world. We will be donating at least 3 million doses of Gardasil, our new vaccine to prevent HPV infection and cervical cancer, to help low-income countries immunize at least 1 million females over the next 5 years. Well, this vaccine has been shown to have the potential to greatly reduce the terrible toll of cervical cancer, and that is a disease that strikes 500,000 women every year and takes the lives of about 250,000 of those women right in the prime of their lives. That's one woman dying every 2 minutes, and that doesn't have to happen. And the toll is greatest in low-income markets where cervical cancer screening programs are not often available. Well, we know that the delivery of Gardasil to adolescents and young females will be harder than for vaccines like rotavirus in the infant population because there is little, if any, infrastructure available to bring vaccines to these female adolescents and young adults in many countries. But we are committed to work with global health partners and the international community, organizations like Gavi, WHO, and UNICEF, to show that indeed there is a way. Well, my company's modern-day founder, George W. Merck, said more than 50 years ago, "We will not rest until a way has been found to bring our finest achievements to everyone." Well, I thank President Clinton and the Clinton Global Initiative for inspiring us to find a way to do just that. And I am pleased to share with you that we believe this commitment will help us achieve our mandate. And through working together with partners such as many of you, we will be able to achieve our mission of bringing our finest achievements to all of those around the world who need them. Thank you.
It's now my great pleasure to introduce Brooke Byers, who is the most important venture capitalist in the life sciences sector, and has been involved in more than 40 technology-based startups. Last year, he made a very significant commitment in the area of global pandemics. Brooke?
Thank you. 2 years ago, saddened by the HIV pandemic and alarmed at the risk that H5N1 and other pathogens could cause, our venture capital firm decided to find ways to help. And 1 year ago at this meeting, my partner John Doerr was inspired by the collective energy and enthusiasm of the meeting to put out a commitment for action, quote, "to commit to fund and build 4 new ventures over the next 12 months, innovating around science in pandemic detection, diagnosis, antivirals, and vaccines." He then called me from this meeting. I was back in the office in California to tell me about his commitment. And I said, "John, that's great. That sounds wonderful. We should put a senior partner and a team on this. It's that important." And he said, "Great, and that would be you." So here I am. Reporting on that. And I want to say that this past year has changed my career and changed my life. John also last year made a commitment to action in the energy and climate change category, and he's leading that. Our firm has been building biotechnology companies for 30 years since we helped start Genentech and we're up to 90 of them, but we had never focused on infectious disease until this past year. And I was asked by Tom to report today on the progress of our commitment. We met our pledge. First of all, to get smart on what we had committed to, we met with leaders of WHO, CDC, HHS, FDA, NIH, universities, pharmaceutical companies, biotech companies, and health workers on the ground all over the world, over 100 experts. And over the past 12 months, we've screened 200 projects and picked six to back. Each project met our criteria for global access, and all the technologies can be implemented in the developed and developing world as well. They are: one is a modular portable vaccine manufacturing system that can be installed and operated at one-third the cost and one-third the time versus conventional systems, and addresses the need for decentralized and globalized vaccine manufacturing. For example, Accelerex is now working with a West African government to install their own vaccine manufacturing capability in that country. Second is a low-cost point-of-care diagnostic that can be used by healthcare workers right in front of the patient for detecting respiratory diseases, including H5N1, and allowing workers to triage patients on site. That is in clinical trials beginning this winter. Third is a novel recombinant virus-like particle vaccine platform that can be used for against flu, HIV, and other threats. This is more mimics the native viral structure of the pathogen and can be more efficiently manufactured in insect cell culture. Fourth is an entirely new approach to antiviral drug discovery that blocks viral entry at the host cell and its pathways, thus with the potential of being effective against a variety of viral pathogens and lowering the risk of emergence of resistance. Fifth is a novel vaccine adjuvant that shows 50 times boost in efficacy, allowing dose sparing. That means allocation of vaccine supplies and better efficacy in children and older adults who have naturally weaker immune system responses. Gevaros began these clinical trials in flu, HBV, and HCV this winter. And finally, an antiviral neuraminidase inhibitor that is shown in animal trials to be several-fold more potent than the currently available drugs and is being tested in seasonal flu right now as a precursor to H5N1 and avian flu patient testing. All of these came about because of our inspiration last year at this meeting, and we have put $45 million into all of these projects and are inspired by the progress of them to do more. So we're going to do more projects and have just committed today to triple that dollar amount. Next week, I'll be convening our annual meeting of biotech CEOs from around the world, 250 come, and we're going to put on the agenda this year a call to them to get more involved in global health and to see what they can do with their research programs to do that. So my partners, thank all of you for all that you've done to inspire us and encourage us, and thank you for allowing us to come.
Thank you, Brooke. That was fantastic. Next, I have the pleasure to introduce Nancy Ossie, who is President and CEO of International Medical Corps and was recently named Nonprofit CEO of the Year. And last year, IMC made a commitment related to mental health services in conflict-affected regions. Nancy?
Thank you. For most people, the face of humanitarian relief is pretty familiar. It's usually the face of a sick child appearing somewhere out of Africa, the face of a healthcare worker exhausted and overwhelmed and tending to those who've lost everything. And while their faces are familiar, these people, their names, they're pretty anonymous to most of the world. Relief organizations all have their unique strengths, and we've had the pleasure of cooperating and collaborating with a number of them. At International Medical Corps, we deploy quickly in emergencies, and then we stay on to teach life-saving skills so that people locally can become self-reliant. Through the continuity of training, we strive to build a new level of health care for people that have been impacted by conflict or extreme poverty or disaster. It also, this training is very important because it also instills pride and hope and confidence, which is absolutely critical to rebuilding broken communities. It is difficult work, but it is worth it. Today, our work is reaching some of those hardest hit in areas like Darfur, Chad, Somalia, and Burundi. So the Clinton Global Initiative has shined a light on this work. It not only showcases what we do, but it removes the anonymity of those we serve. Last year, we accepted CGI's challenge. International Medical Corps made a commitment of $3.2 million to raise and implement a program to bring psychosocial services and mental health services into some of the toughest working arenas in the world. So think about it. Darfur, Southern Sudan, the Eastern Chad Triangle, the Congo, and also Uganda. And although mental health in many of these emergencies often gets overlooked, we were able not only to meet but to surpass our commitment to meet these needs. CGI has certainly mobilized support from many sources, including corporations, many of you here. I just want to name a few. Since we were together last year, the GE Foundation stepped up with an emergency grant for Darfur of $2 million. International Medical Corps was in great company. We shared this award with UNICEF and with CARE. And a $1 million grant from the Starbucks Foundation and the Ethos Waters Fund equipped us with the ability to provide clean water to some of the most remote villages in Kenya. And, of course, as you heard from Susan, Procter & Gamble came forward to support the implementation of a safe water program for children in the Congo, another very tough area. And from the emergency perspective, the Gates Foundation has always been very supportive in those golden hours immediately following an emergency when people are dying and don't need to die. So in the last 21 years, starting with Afghanistan in the 80s, I've seen firsthand most all of the emergencies of the last two decades. And whether it was Rwanda or Kosovo or the tsunami-impacted regions of the world, it is always the local health worker who is in the fight against disease and death, and certainly the local health worker who's on the front lines in the event of a catastrophic health crisis like the pandemic flu. We have always known how important this health worker is, and it is why training is the foundation of all the work that we do and why we shine CGI spotlight on it this year. So this year in 2007, International Medical Corps is committing to train women from six sub-Saharan African countries to help bridge the health worker gap by creating a women's healthcare network. Through the power that comes from the training of women, this initial investment will reach people for thousands of people for many, many years to come. That is the leverage and the impact of training. I'm also thrilled to announce an individual, philanthropist Amy Robbins, who's going to help us kick off this initiative and join our efforts with a commitment of $250,000 to International Medical Corps. And any others who are interested in joining our efforts, please do. The next 2 days, for those of you who've been here before, you will find, of course, and you already know, that they're going to pass by very quickly. On Friday, we're going to leave feeling inspired and provoked and challenged, and we're going to just want to go out and change the world. But when we return home, it's very easy to get lost in our everyday lives. I think the challenge is not to let that happen. And the reason for it is this. The reason there's hope around the conference and all the promise that CGI brings, as well as the many expectations that it creates, is because it has been demonstrated over and over again, and you've heard already from speakers before, by working together, not only do our CGI commitments really improve the world, but in our case, they truly, truly save many, many lives. Thanks very much.
Next, I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Peter Salama, who's the Chief of Global Health for UNICEF, and he has done important research on malnutrition, measles, and pediatric HIV/AIDS, and Dr. Salama will be discussing commitment from UNICEF in the area of child survival.
Thanks very much, Tom. I think an event like this provides a really good moment for us to take stock of where we are in global health. In 1960, there were 20 million children that died around the world every year. 2 weeks ago, we were able to announce, based on surveys done in more than 80 countries around the world, that for the first time, the number of children under 5 dying every year is less than 10 million. The number is 9.7 million. Of course, 9.7 million deaths among children under 5 is completely unacceptable. What's worse is that regions such as sub-Saharan Africa are failing to progress as quickly as they should. Mostly, this is because many of the countries are affected by conflict, as we heard from our last speaker, or by HIV/AIDS. And indeed, in some of these countries, progress is not only decelerating, it's reversing. Around 50% of all child deaths now occur in sub-Saharan Africa. So we have a long way to go. In addition, more than two-thirds of the deaths are completely preventable, and they're due to very common causes, neonatal causes, pneumonia, diarrhea, malaria, and HIV. Last year, the US Fund for UNICEF, the domestic arm of UNICEF, made a commitment. They said they would scale up programs in 25 countries with the highest under-5 mortality and spend around $500 million through 2009 on these integrated packages of community-delivered services. I'm pleased to say today that the commitment was met for 2006 and exceeded, and we're about more than 50% funded for 2007. More importantly, the US Fund for UNICEF, which is our largest donor, has decided this year that child survival will be its overriding priority for the organization. Furthermore, the US Fund is just one part of UNICEF, and UNICEF itself has made a commitment to continue spending more than $1 billion every year on global child survival until the job is done. But indeed, UNICEF is just one part of what I think we're really seeing, which is a global movement for children. This movement includes many of the organizations that my previous speakers represented, IMC, PNG, Merck, the Gates Foundation, but also some of our big civil society partners are part of this global movement. Save the Children Fund, World Vision, Plan, Care, and Concern. In our press releases a couple of weeks ago, we talked about global child survival being at a tipping point. Some were surprised that we were that optimistic. Just want to explain to you why we're so optimistic. It's not just the mortality numbers. Over the next 3 months, we'll be releasing numbers on immunization, on vitamin A, on insecticide-treated bed nets for malaria, on rates of early exclusive breastfeeding. All of these indicators are progressively going up. In addition, many countries, and many poor countries, are leading the way. Countries such as Mozambique, Malawi, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Madagascar, Niger, have all decreased under 5 mortality by more than 20% between the last two national surveys. Finally, we're optimistic because of the political commitment we're seeing. You heard today that the Prime Minister of Norway has made a staggering announcement with the Government of Netherlands. On September the 5th, the Prime Minister of the UK made another announcement that his first major development initiative overseas would be about MDGs 4, 5 and 6, child survival, maternal survival, HIV and malaria. A few years ago, many of us would not have dreamed that the heads of state of these major powers actually focusing on the health-related Millennium Development Goals. So in summary, we know what to do. We have the evidence-based interventions. They've been published in The Lancet. All of our organizations have signed on. We increasingly know how to do it by scaling up these interventions at the community level. We can measure it. We have a global system in place that actually measures impact. Very few development programs can say that. They measure mortality reductions in countries. And finally, and thanks here to the work of the Clinton Global Initiative, we have enormous political momentum and an enormous opportunity to meet the Millennium Development Goal number 4. That's a reduction by 2/3 in under 5 mortality by 2015. Thanks for the opportunity. Let's all continue to work together.
That was terrific, and I'd like to have one round of applause for all the commitment makers who spoke. So next, I'd like to ask Daniel Stone with America Speaks to explain the design of the interactive part of our working group sessions. And America Speaks has been doing this for all 3 years, and they do a fantastic job, and it's really become one of the highlights of CGI. So Daniel?
So welcome, everybody, back to the Global Health Working Group track. The CGI, as we all know, is a unique conference in many respects. Certainly one of them is the unique group of people that is gathered here for these 3 days in New York every year. Another unique aspect of it, as we've just heard about, is the commitments, is the action orientation that is really embedded and permeates throughout this conference from the very beginning to its very end. A third that unique aspect of this conference is the way that it engages everybody in the conference in the conversation, not just people who are on the stage or people who are on panels, but every single one of you is really asked and encouraged to be an active part of these conversations that take place over these 3 days. So I want to explain to you, especially for those of you who were not with us in the last year or two, exactly how these conversations are going to work here during the working group sessions, because it is really in the working group sessions that a lot of the interactivity can actually take place. Each working group session, and there are 5 for each of the working group tracks, is going to be organized similarly, that the session will be about 90 minutes long, and then each session is organized around a single topic. The session begins with a panelist discussion led by a moderator about a particular issue. In this case, in the first session here, for example, it's on maternal and child health. Following an initial discussion of the issue by the panelists and the moderator, we are then going to ask each one of you at your tables to engage in a conversation about a specific question that we are going to pose to you. Each table is going to have a trained facilitator who's going to enable you to stay focused on the question at hand, make sure that everybody's engaged in the conversation, and through laptop computers, they're going to record the key points that come out of the conversation. And as they record the key points, they're going to send them over to a corner of the room that is to my left, that is called the theme team, and they're going to be reviewing your comments as they come in during the course of the conversation to identify what are the major messages or themes that seem to come up over and over, and what are some of the unique and provocative ideas that come out of your conversations. At the end of about a half hour of table group conversation, the panelists and moderator will return to the stage, and they will at that time respond to some questions that you folks may pose to them, and we'll talk about how those get posed. And then after a few minutes, our theme team will wrap up its work, and Tom Khalil will come back to the stage, and he'll share with you what were some of the themes and what were some of what we call the gems of your conversation that the theme team has identified.
They come up with something good.
We're confident that you will. And then that will give the panelists and moderator a chance to respond to that, give their thoughts on it, and make closing comments. And then we will conclude the session with the awarding of a few more commitments, and that will be the end of the 90 minutes. Every session will follow essentially the same pattern that I've just described. Now, in the last 2 years, and those of you who are here know this, we've had some really extraordinary conversations at the tables, that there's an incredible wealth of talent, of thoughtfulness, of ideas that exists all the way throughout this conference, not just what's on the stage, and we really do capitalize on that, both by engaging you in the conversation, and everything that's entered into the computers is captured for the record, and it's used during the course of the year after this to draw upon to suggest other kinds of commitments or actions that other folks might want to take into consideration as they go about developing their commitments. So it serves a very important function here, not just today and in this conference, but after the conference as well. So I want to encourage all of you to really engage very fully in these conversations, give your very best to them, and enjoy them. And we'll see you at the first session.